couple of guys I'm excited to be here with. Someone I'm excited to meet in Juma. And Kazim, who's great to have back, who was a little under the weather, but like a trooper, the show has gone on.
I couldn't let you down, Andy.
Really? That's good. There's at least one person around who feels that way. I appreciate that. So, you guys have never actually met, is this correct? The Sultans have never come together on anything?
Not until today.
Yeah. And what a lovely gentleman he is, too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quite a talented rhythm section. I want to get out a tambourine and play with you guys or something.
It would be wonderful.
Now, Kazim, what was your memory of Woodstock? Because we're going to talk a lot about the fact Juma played at Woodstock, which was, must have been some experience. But you're around my age.
Well, I was actually I was working in Manhattan at the time. I was 14 years old, and I was a tape op at Variety Studios on 42nd Street, and I was coming in for my week, because I was 14. I was still in high school and could only work on the weekends. And I was coming in, and there were already people coming back from the weekend before, which was Woodstock, covered in mud, taking the Staten Island ferry. People who lived on Staten Island, they were head to toe in mud going home.
Well, I know it took time to get back because a lot of people stayed over to help clean up with the hog farm and different areas. And so even, as you said, a week after, there were still people on the site in Bethel.
So, Juma, what was Woodstock like? Because most of us here have never had the opportunity, but what was it like to go through that? How long was it? Like 3 days, I guess, right?
It was 3 days festival, correct.
Right. So what was that experience like for you?
No, it was wonderful because the whole concept came from the original hippie beings from California. And as that grew, they had in Woodstock prior to the Woodstock Festival. They used to have this, what was called a sound out, and there was a woman who named Pam Copeland, who was a local resident in Woodstock. She did the sound out. So the local concept of the Woodstock Festival actually came from that. It derived from the sound out, where Pam Copeland had a farm, and every year for about 4 years, she had an eclectic group for 3 or 4 days out at her farm.
And his father, Al, I think, still perpetuates some kind of Woodstock thing. Isn't it Al Hendricks, Jimmy's father?
I don't believe so. Maybe we have it out of context. When you say perpetuate.
Well, I mean, I think he had kind of like a Woodstock revival after, years, didn't he?
Oh, no. Prior to his death, they crowned him king in Seattle, part of the Bumper Fest. And this was long after Jimmy's death. In fact, this was probably in the
like the 90s,
late
90s,
in the 90s, correct. I was there, and they had a it was part of the whole Bumper Fest that that they have in even to today in Seattle, Washington.
So now wait a second. You say that Pam Copeland started that was the impetus for Woodstock. Now, was Michael Lang one of the people that went that knew?
Michael Lang took the concept. Mm-hmm. I knew Michael Lang when he came from Florida. Mm-hmm. He and a group of people came from Florida. They were residing in Woodstock, and they took her concept and ran with it and tried to do a festival locally, and the town fathers would not let them do that.
Right.
And they searched for other sites, and they finally settled on
Bethel. Yeah. Bethel. So originally they wanted to do it in Woodstock.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They really wanted to do it in Woodstock because Woodstock had a history since the early 1900s of doing festivals and artist activities.
Well, and also the other thing too is that Woodstock is an Indian burial ground as well.
Well, it was an Indian burial ground, and we can get into that story because the Native American never lived there.
Yeah.
In Woodstock proper,
they come
up there
because
it was a burial ground, and they were along the Hudson. And when the Dutch came in and took over all the farming land and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. That's when the Whiteheads came in and purchased a vast amount of property, and they turned it into an artist colony.
So how did the Indians feel about what we were doing there? Not too good.
How does the Indians feel about America in general?
Yeah, in general.
So
yeah.
That's another topic. If you want to, take that up at another time, we could talk about that.
Now, Kazim, the last time you were on, you were preparing a rather unique album with an unusual cover.
Yes.
How did that end up working out?
Well,
for you?
I'm still working on it, actually. I'm still doing. What I'm doing is I'm soliciting my fans to send in photos of themselves, and their individual photos on the put their individual photos on the cover of my record, which will make up a portrait of myself,
like a collage.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the collage will be a portrait of myself on my record, and
it's going to require quite a skill.
Yeah,
to compile everyone's image.
Yeah, and we're still collecting pictures, and I'm still working on the record. So
the fans are going to help you save face, basically. I guess.
Well, you could put it that way. Yeah, right. Sure. Okay. Yeah. So I'm right in the midst of it, actually.
Well, both of you played with someone, say different people, but that are, you know, real legends in rock and roll. First of all, Chasm, how did you connect with Todd Rundgren? And I believe you're still playing with him, right?
Yeah, I still work with Todd all the time. I managed to ingratiate myself with a group of musicians in New York City through Cherry Vanilla, who was a rock poetress/publicist at the time in the early 70s, with Main Man Records. That was David Bowie's record label. Excuse me. And she introduced me to a bunch of people like Mick Ronson, Michael Kamen, Lee Childers, or the photographer Lee Childers. And through Michael Kamen, being friends with Michael, Michael knew Todd and mentioned to me that Todd was looking for a bass player, and that's how that happened. I just went for an audition.
He's a real talented guy. I believe on some of his albums he played everything, right? Was that Something Anything? I believe he played pretty much all the parts.
Not only Something Anything, there's in a couple of albums that most of his solo albums he does everything by himself.
Well, that's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. I have enough trouble with one instrument, but that's pretty good. But Juma, you play a couple of things, right? You play bass and percussion?
Well, primarily I came to New York in 1965 as a bass player. And I came with a group from Northern California called the Depth Probers. Sonny Simmons was the mainstay saxophone player extraordinaire, and myself and a drummer named Paul Smith, and trumpet player, female trumpet player, very powerful, Barbara Donnell. And we came to New York in 1965. We were located on the east side of New York, lower Manhattan, and we traveled back and forth upstate to intermediate workshop just outside of Woodstock in Saugerties, and we were doing festivals and activities there.
How did you get hooked up with Jimi Hendrix? Because that's like an amazing person to be able to say you played with.
Well, during those days, when Hendrix was still at the Cafe Wa in different places and had Jimmy James in the Flame, I met him doing prior to that in Harlem, and then downtown I was always playing congas, even though I play bass, percussion and flute, but I met him down in the village prior to him going to England and becoming famous. And when he returned from England, about a year and a half, almost 2 years later, I was in Woodstock, sitting on the bench in what they call the Village Green.
The Village Green,
right,
yeah,
Village
I know
Green,
it well.
You know, playing congas, and he came by and said, "Oh, I know you," and he said, "Come up to the house and jam." And so we went up to Mike Jeffries that evening, and it was just acoustic guitar and congas. And we just sort of had a mesh, and he was saying that he wanted to start to develop a new sound. And so we started working together. Eventually, about a month or a month and a half, 2 months later, this was prior to Woodstock, he got a house in Boyceville. Just up about 6 miles above Woodstock, near the high school, on Trevor Hollow Road at the end, and they got a group house. And we started bringing in musicians and auditioning to put a new group together. He didn't want to play with the same trio that
he
was playing with.
Yeah, he stopped with the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and it was really a whole different thing, from the power trio to, I guess, a six-piece, right?
Well, he didn't know how many pieces were going. Had he had his way, it would have been an orchestra, because he was open, and he was open to new concepts, and he was hearing a lot of different sounds. And so we've, as you can see from a lot of the bootlegs and a lot of the things that are around, that we were in and out of the record plant, the Hit Factory, on and on, recording, plus we had a four-track tape machine up at the house, and doing, you know, different types of music.
What was your initial impression of him when you first met Jimi Hendrix? What was he like?
He was pretty well. He was, when I say wild, he was wild and flashy, just like the rest of the so-called hippies during those days.
He had a larger-than-life look to him, didn't he? He just seemed like bigger than he was physically.
Well, he was, because, see, the story of Jimi Hendrix, there's no one person that can tell the story of Jimi. Each one of us can share a different component, but I can tell you that he was one of the people, special people in the world, that loved people. And his stage demeanor is totally opposite of what he was as a person, a quiet-spoken guy, almost shy, very brilliant and intellectual in his own respect.
Okay. Now, you're still playing with Todd. Obviously, unfortunately, he can't play with Hendrix, but...
I wish.
Yeah. So what is Todd like? What kind of guy is he?
Oh, Todd's great. He's a... You know, there's a saying. It says that... genius creates and talent delivers, and I think that both in the case of Jimi and in Todd, you kind of have a bit of both. You know, there's a bit of a genius and a bit of a really hugely talented guy in Todd. He's constantly stretching the envelope. Never likes to do the same thing twice.
That's kind of like Frank Zappa, who. You would see him one show, he'd be playing rock guitar, and the next show he'd be conducting an orchestra.
Yeah, but I think Zappa music is, you know, it was always kind of that, the same type of thing, which is like the really eclectic prog rock, avant-garde kind of stuff. That's Zappa music. You know, you always knew what you were going to get. You weren't going to get a 3.5-minute love ballad from Frank Zappa, you know. But as far as Todd goes, I think Todd's one of the great American songwriters in the last 50 years, actually. It's unsung songwriter.
You're about to go out with him. Who's in the current band?
Well, right now, what we're doing is we're doing this project that's pretty unique. Everybody seems to be jumping on this particular bandwagon now. We're doing two albums front to back. We're doing the Todd album, which came out in 1974, I believe, and his album called Healing, which came out in 81, I think 81 or 82, I'm not sure. So we get on stage and we perform each album from start to finish. And there's like a costume change and lasers and smoke and all kinds of stuff. It's really great, actually.
Well, I saw him with you, but I also saw him a number of times before you, mm-hmm. and he would do two shows in that concert. He'd come out, I remember once with Hall & Oates, mm-hmm. and a female singer sat around the piano mm-hmm. and did Hello, It's Me, and I saw the light, and The Dream Goes On Forever. And then he'd come out with six piece with three keyboard players and do the Utopia stuff. I guess that was with Moogie mm-hmm. Klingman, one of my former guests.
Yeah,
did you ever get to play with Moogie?
Actually, funny enough, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, in January, there was a Utopia reunion. And Todd, Moogie Klingman, John Siegler, who was a bass player, Kevin Elman, the drummer, Ralph Schuckett, the keyboard player, all got together and played at the Highline Ballroom downtown it was a benefit concert because Moogie has cancer right now, so we were trying to raise money for Moogie's medical bills, and it was a really great night, and two sold out shows, everybody loved it, everybody had a great time, and so that was the original Utopia.
Are any of those guys in the current lineup?
No. The only people in the current lineup are myself, Bobby Strickland, saxophone player from San Francisco, Greg Hawks, keyboard player from the Cars, Prairie Prince, the drummer from the Tubes, and Jesse Gress, who plays with Tony Levin. He's a guitar player.
Now, when Jimi was the headliner at Woodstock, Juma, now my understanding is the crowd had really been through hell by the time he came on. Like, what did you find the reaction was to you guys? Because there were 500,000 people at one point, and when Jimi came on, it was like 180,000 left, I think.
That is correct, because we arrived about 10 p.m. I think it was Saturday evening. We were supposed to go on at 12 midnight. They were so far behind that we had to stay the night And we ended up going on at 6 o'clock the next morning.
Where did you stay, Jean? I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm fascinated with this
story. Well, we stayed in the house of, I forget the farmer's name that...
Yasgur.
Stayed in Yasgur's little house, mm-hmm. and that's where we camped out until we were finished. When we got there, they had the band, Sly and the Family Stone.
Right.
They had so many other bands going on at that time. So we just camped out at in Yasgur's house and... until we went on the next morning. And by then, when the sun came up, people were trying to get out of it. They had had it after 2.5 days in the mud.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get back to more of this stuff, and this is great, but my engineer Betty is throwing daggers at me. We have to go to a commercial break, and I bruise easy, so we'll be right back.